from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 15th of January, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock here on 2FM, we're going to get reaction to the news that Carla Ward has been appointed as Republic of Ireland Women's Head Coach. Keith Tracy is in studio to look back on last night's Premier League games and to preview all of tonight's action as well. Plus, Damien Lawler sets us up for the AIB All-Ireland Club Championship Finals, and Michael Corcoran has the latest on the Ireland Rugby Squad for the Six Nations. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200, plus we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
So absolutely huge news that the FAI have confirmed that Carla Ward is going to be the Republic of Ireland Women's Head Coach. Maeve de Bruycke is standing by. We're going to get reaction from her to this news. We'll also go through her management team and we will get some audio from Carla Ward herself. So do stay tuned for that. Keith Tracy is with me in studio. I'm not sure how you're feeling, Keith, about tonight's game between Arsenal and Spurs, but you're wearing an Arsenal jersey, so you must be feeling confident.
I'm really tired to get away with that being on radio, but you've out with me there. Now I love Derby Day. I can't wait for it tonight, and it's not because I'm overly confident. It's just because I love Derby Day. I think it'll be a really entertaining game. Spurs, you know, it's like playing a poker player that every hand he goes all in. What do you do against that? It's very, very difficult. I think it could boil down to set pieces, the lack of Spurs being able to defend them and Arsenal being so good. But you know, I look at Arsenal and I think we've been really good lately, but we don't really have a striker. And you look at every team around us, Marie, you look at Forest with Chris Wood, Chelsea with Palmer and Nicholas Jackson, Newcastle with Isak, Liverpool with Salah, Manchester City with Haaland. We lack that player, we really do. And I think if we had that, it would bridge the gap, but we don't have that and we're missing our best player in Saka. So I think we can win tonight, but in terms of picking up the league and going and hunting Liverpool, I'm not so sure.
Okay, we'll have lots more on that and of course Keith's reaction as well to that Liverpool Forest game from last night. But now we're turning our attention to rugby. A big day today for the Ireland team because the squad for the Six Nations, the upcoming Guinness Six Nations, was announced by head coach Simon Easterby. Just one uncapped player, that is Leinster's Jack Boyle, but good news on the injury front for Dan Sheehan. Michael Corcoran is with us now to talk us through all of it. Michael, a big one really, the Six Nations with Simon Easterby stepping in, Andy Farrell on a Lions sabbatical. There wasn't any major surprises, but in a way, was that to be expected?
Hi Marie, yeah, I think it was actually. You know, always regardless of who the head coach is, there's always a lot of debate beforehand and maybe even more animated debate after a squad is announced. The reality is that, you know, with Andy Farrell, as you said, gone off for the Lions for a while and Simon Easterby taking over, so there's a sense of continuity there in terms of the current coaching staff that's there. So there was never really going to be any major surprises in terms of you know, the composition of the squad. Indeed, you know, whether it was going to be more uncapped players or otherwise. So, you know, given the fact that there were some injury concerns there, you know, with Craig Casey out, just whether you went with two or three out halves, and what the story was, say, with Dan Sheehan and James Lowe, they're back training with Leinster, but they haven't played a match yet. So they're included in the squad on the basis that they will get some game time at Leinster either this weekend or indeed the following weekend when they play the Stormers in the URC. The Ireland squad actually are heading to Portugal next week for warm weather training, something that has done them the world of good for the last couple of years. And the two lads will join up with them there, provided they come through kind of the next two weekends, if you understand what I mean. So, look, I mean, you could debate who should be in or who maybe shouldn't be in. You know, Tom O'Toole was suspended, so he's not there. I will say I'm kind of slightly surprised that Tom O'Hearn, the Munster second row back row, isn't included in the 36. But he loses out because Cian Prendergast and Cormac Azzichigu and Ryan Baird are there and they're in good form. So I think he's kind of just slightly elbowed out of the way there. Maybe you could make a case for Ollie Yeager, the Munster prop as well, but Thomas Clarkson has gotten ahead of him in November and he retains his place there. So you know, we could argue for a long period of time as to whether people should be in or otherwise, but the reality is that's the bones of it. Ireland have won the Six Nations for the last 2 years. It's not a tournament for trying things out. It's a tournament to win, because there's some pretty substantial prize money on offer as well too. And Ireland, with the most experienced squad, will be hoping to win the title for the third year in a row.
And just given as well, I guess, Michael, the attritional nature of the Six Nations, there's a good chance a lot of those players that might be feeling left out now will get their opportunity as the tournament progresses. But just from the perspective of rugby fans, the Autumn Internationals maybe weren't as perfect as you would hope for Andy Farrell heading on his way. So is it the best idea, really, just to keep things steady, or do we need to see an evolution of this team?
I think we'll see a natural evolution, and then the natural line in the sand in terms of the evolution will come on the summer tour, when Ireland played, was to be confirmed, but my understanding is that they'll play certainly one, if not two, tests against Georgia. I think they're also going to pencil in a game against Portugal in Faroe as well. So, you know, given the fact that a large number of the Irish squad will probably be part of the British and Irish Lions touring party that will go to Australia, that's when we're going to see the chance for the next generation, if you understand what I mean, to kind of come through there, basically. So I think that's the natural line in terms of bringing people through, and then we'll see a more kind of mix and match kind of scenario for the November internationals next year. But I mean, the Six Nations is not a time for experimenting, and it's a time. You know, it's a time, as I said, with the prize money and the title there to be won. And I think it's the summer is the time when the natural evolution of this team will actually come.
Dan Sheehan, will he be donating his body to medical science when it's all done and dusted? That's a great recovery for him.
It's absolutely incredible. I'm looking forward to having a chat with him to find out. Yeah. I saw him actually at Leinster Media yesterday. I'm looking forward to having a chat with him to find out how he recovered from an ACL injury from the summer until now. And I mean, he's been back running and training for the last 2 to 3 weeks. So certainly the medical scientists will be keeping a watching brief on that, really. I'm sure he'll go on the lecture series when he finishes. But it's interesting that, I mean, even after the La Rochelle game in France last weekend, that Dan Sheehan was name-checked, even though he didn't play in the game, by Ron Nagara as being a world-class player. And that's exactly what he is. So, I mean, to have him available and fit and ready, and fingers crossed. I mean, he does have to get some game time at Leinster against either Bath this week or Stormers the week after. But fingers crossed he comes through that. I mean, that's just a fantastic addition, a supplement there from an Ireland point of view. I think realistically, Ireland probably thought that maybe the Six Nations might be too soon for Dan Sheehan. But, you know, the fact that it looks quite positive from his point of view, I think, is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, big time. And there's a few development players named as well. Hugh Cooney, Colin Ford,
James McNabney and Ben Murphy. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at, say, the likes of Thomas Clarkson, Cormac Izichigwu, to a degree, Gus McCarthy, Sam Prendergast, they've all been development players in the past, and they're all now... Yeah, they're all now internationals, basically. And McNabney's been absolutely brilliant for Ulster in the last number of the last couple of games that he's played. And Ben Murphy's certainly shot the lights out for Connacht. I think he's got 6 or 7 tries already so far this season, and he's a really, really good scrum half. And Cathal Ford is the more seasoned of the four of them, if you understand what I mean. But like, he's been really good for Connacht for the last couple of years as well too, and has got a really strong boot in terms of kicking. And can play out half if needs be. So they're the kind of players who you would see. The coaches will have a look at them up close and personal, so to speak, during the course of the Six Nations Championship. And they're the kind of players that you would see probably making the breakthrough realistically when it comes to that summer tour.
Are we going to have a big battle for the number 10 between Jack Rowley and Sam Prendergast?
Well, I think there's going to be a big media battle anyway, to be honest about it. The battle lines are already drawn between members of the media as to whether it should be one or the other, basically. Jack Crowley was the man in possession, and then Prendergast came and certainly didn't look out of his depth last Sunday. What a very impressive performance by Leinster again. And again, he was a fellow who was name-checked by Ron Nagara, and I use him as the benchmark because He knows so much about that position. So yeah, it's going to be one of the big talking points. It'll be interesting to see who they go for that match against England in the opening round. It's a big call to make, and normally you don't make that many changes during the course of the Six Nations Championship, but as you said, injury could play a part. But you know, given the fact that it's England first up followed by Scotland away, they're two massive games. And yeah, I think that'll be one of the talking points, certainly Jack Crowley versus Sam Prendergast. But it's great because I think they'll bring the best out in each other.
Yeah, they will. Lots to look forward to there, and lots to look forward to this weekend as well. Leinster against Bath, as Michael mentioned there. 5:30 on Saturday. It is on RTE2, and you can also listen live to RTE Radio 1's Saturday Sport for commentary on that. Michael Corcoran, thank you so much. As always,
thanks,
we're going
William.
To take a very quick break, but do stay with us though, because we'll be turning our attention to football and the new manager of the Republic of Ireland women's team, Carla Ward.
Game on. On 2FM.
Now, welcome back. If you are just joining us, news in a little bit earlier that Carla Ward has been appointed Republic of Ireland women's head coach. The FAI confirmed the news a little bit earlier. She used to manage Sheffield United, Birmingham City and Aston Villa. She succeeds Eileen Gleeson, and she's going to take the role with the media effect and go right through the campaign for the 2027 FIFA Women's World Cup. She's going to be joined by Alan Mann as one of her coaches. He was a former Man City women's head coach, and Emma Byrne is also going to reprise her role in the senior setup as goalkeeping coach. I'm delighted to say now that Maeve de Burke joins us on the line. Maeve, first of all, what's your reaction to this news?
Yeah, I think it's pretty positive, to be honest. I know there's been a lot of scrutiny, I suppose, over the FAI and their managerial appointments lately, but I think, you know, the timeline and everything of this, I think, was pretty satisfactory in a way. Like, it's good to have her in place now, a month ahead of the next game against Turkey, and I think those games will provide her with a good opportunity to hopefully hit the ground running.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. It was done quite swiftly. I think we probably weren't expecting it to be done as quick as it was. But even as well, good to see that Carla Ward has her coaching ticket in place as well. Alan Mahan, her assistant coach, and then Emma Byrne is going to be the goalkeeping coach. And for people that don't know Alan Mahan, he's a former footballer, but his quite a lot of experience in the women's game as well, and most notably with Manchester City women's team. So he definitely knows the players anyway. Maeve?
Yeah, he does. And, you know, himself and
We've lost Maeve. We're going to come back to Maeve in just a minute. Keith Tracy is with us as well. Keith, it's always good to get the job done, and for the FAI to now have a women's manager in place, a full coaching team, and heading into what's a really important time for the women's team, because they didn't get to qualify for the Euros. We'll be sitting and watching on the television wishing that Ireland were there, but unfortunately they won't be. But at least they'll be building and working away behind the scenes.
Yeah, I felt like there was a lot of momentum built up with the women's Ireland women's team, and you know, not making the Euros was a real tough one to take, because we all felt that over the two games we did have enough to go and beat the Welsh team. But look, Wales were very, very good on the day, and look, yeah, Carla Ward coming in, I think, is a very interesting appointment. The one you were talking about, Marie Alan Mahan, I think is one that's really, really interesting. A brilliant playing career, and actually when I was looking at his Google, I wasn't sure if I googled myself. We seem to have played for a lot of the same
clubs. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm not too sure. I'll let you make your mind up on that. But he obviously at Blackburn, Burnley and Wigan, they're teams I would have been in and around other than Wigan. So yeah, very, very interesting. But that Nations League group is very, very difficult, with Turkey, Slovenia and Greece and League B. So hopefully the women can do well in the first game against Turkey.
Yeah, keep making progress. Maeve de Burke is back again. Maeve, we were just talking about Alan Mahan and the fact that he has been involved in the women's game for quite some time and will be familiar as well with the players.
Yeah, he would be, and yeah, like he said, like, he's a great playing career. He was at the Ireland under 21s as well, and a couple of caps at the seniors too, so he'll kind of, I know, just like Emma, will bring that, you know, that passion and Irishness as well. It's really important, I think, to have around the camp, and then that kind of blended with the experience of Carla. Like he already mentioned, she has great experience at, you know, Sheffield, Birmingham, Aston Villa most recently, and she would have you know, managed the likes of Anna Patton, obviously, at Villa, and Rusha Littlejohn Long would have been there at her time in Birmingham as well, so she'll be familiar definitely with a lot of the players. And I know even before Anna was deciding to declare for Ireland, she would have talked to Carla about the decision. So I guess that'll be another aspect maybe that Carla will be looking to recruit potentially, you know, girls who'll be eligible to play for Ireland too, that might have played perhaps at England underage or that type of thing too. I'm sure she'll be trying to recruit, like any manager is always trying to improve what they have, and particularly with our, you know, recent retirements, you know, they'll definitely be looking to improve the squad.
And Maeve, just as a former international, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, that they're going to be looking to recruit players that might have played for someone else internationally, just given the things that Ruaidhrí Littlejohn had said about how much we need to work on our players here at home and develop the technical side of their game and increase the contact hours and make a better pathway to the international scene? Do you think that's the right thing to do, to focus on bringing in players that might have eligibility, or to look at what we have here at home?
Personally, I think we need to look what we have at home, but from a manager's point of view, if she is such a short-term contract, that's the unfortunate side of it. She's only, you know, she's her contract runs till the end of the 2027 World Cup campaign. So as much as she might like to say that she'll be interested in developing it from the grassroots up, I don't think they can be too long-term looking as a manager. I think they have to be very short-term focused. But I think that's why, you know, on the grassroots up, I think the head of women's and girls football role that, you know, we go on about a lot is really vital. And that can be more kind of medium to long-term looking at trying to develop the league and the women's Premier Division and, you know, get the players coming through the pathway in the right way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Carla Ward's vision is. Let's hear from Renaud, though, as she spoke to the FAI a little bit earlier.
It's one that I've probably wanted for more than maybe just this period. I think it's something that I've worked with Irish players before. Their personalities maybe match a little bit of mine, and I think we stand for the same in terms of our values and our principles. So I felt it was the right match, and yeah, it's and I've seen even in this sort of last few days, I believe that as well. I've been in club football for a long time now, and I think I've had a fairly successful career so far, but I think work-life balance, number one, you know, stepping away from club football, I think it was the next step. I wanted to step into an international stage, the opportunity to try and get to the World Cup, which is, for me, most important, and an opportunity to work for an organisation and a country, like I said, that maybe matches how I see things. And that's something that's really important to me, because I think values are, for me, so strong.
Carla Ward speaking to the FAI. Will she have a bit of a rebuilding job to do, just given what happened with over the last few weeks? So many players stepping away, Niamh Fahey and Diane Caldwell, most notable, and look, who knows who could follow in the next while as well, Maeve.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's kind of a slight bit of rebuilding, I guess, in terms of that sense. They're really experienced players to be missing. But I think, you know, over the years, we've definitely have developed the younger girls, and there is a lot of them trying to break through into the starting 11 who've been around the squad now for quite a while too. So this, I suppose, will give them an opportunity to step up as well. And then obviously you look at the younger players who are just trying to get into the squad too. You know, you have the likes of young girls like you know, Ellen Malloy, Erin McLaughlin, those type of players who are in and around the squad. So yeah, I think we have a lot of talent there, but obviously the experience will be greatly missed. But I think you know, Carlo should hopefully be able to then bring on those younger ones too, and like I said, it's probably a good opportunity for her. Just, she did mention their work-life balance, it's definitely not as hands-on as club football, so it would probably suit her. And you know, she stepped away from club football, she did mention, you know, to spend more time with family. So I think an international setting in that regard, being less kind of contact hours, would probably suit her going forward.
So Maeve, how big a challenge does Carla Ward have in her hands to get to that World Cup she mentioned in her interview there?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, that's for sure. I think, you know, we got quite lucky with our draw getting to the 2023 World Cup. You know, the only team that we got a point off higher ranked than us in a competitive game is Sweden away. So we got quite lucky in terms of we just had to beat the teams around us. So hopefully we, you know, get through this Nations B campaign successfully, you know, like against Turkey, Slovenia, Greece, and then it should hopefully try to give us a good seeding and a slightly easier route to the World Cup. But it's definitely, it's going to be really challenging. And I think she knows that too. She's been around the game long enough to know that qualifying for a major tournament is going to be really difficult, and the World Cup is going to be really hard. But hopefully if we can all, I think it's definitely a positive appointment. I think she's as best as it was available, I think, out there. And hopefully she can get the job done and get us to Rio in 2027.
Wouldn't it be great? Maeve Tverke, thank you so much for joining us. And for all of that, we're going to take another quick break, but stay with us. Keith Tracy is here in his Arsenal jersey, ready to look ahead to tonight's big game against Spurs.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We had an absolutely cracking night of Premier League action last night. It kind of crept up on us because we're not used to having so many big games on Tuesday night, but they did happen and we got loads of goals. So for anyone who might have missed it, there was Manchester City were playing against Brentford, Chelsea and Bournemouth, West Ham and Fulham and Forest and Liverpool. So some great games, Keith. But let's start with the Nottingham Forest and Liverpool won, because there were so many questions heading in to this game. We finished 1-1 and Nottingham Forest got such an early goal. But after the game and just the fact that, okay, look, maybe Liverpool were more dominant, but still Nottingham Forest were able to come away with a draw, can we now say that they're in the title race?
I think we have to. I don't think I can sit here as an Arsenal fan and say that we're in the title race and say Nottingham Forest aren't. The points return has been absolutely out of this world. Do I think they'll maintain it and, you know, go and push Liverpool towards the end? I'm not too sure. But look, they've done it over the first 20 games. They've been absolutely brilliant. The one thing I really like about Nottingham Forest is, you know, so much of modern football is about, you know, keeping possession, strangling team, getting into the opposition's half. Forest aren't too bothered about all of that possession stuff. They win the ball back in transition and they go and give it to players that can horse you straight away on the wings. They're very, very dangerous. And I've already spoke about the need for a real top-class centre-forward who will score goals and occupy centre-forward. And Chris Wood is exactly that. And I think it's brilliant for him, because it wasn't too long ago that Newcastle took him off of Burnley for a couple of million, and he was sort of seen as a bit of a stopgap player. You know, we'll sign you while somebody else is injured. I think it was Callum Wilson was injured at the time. They brought him in to try and stunt Burnley and just keep Newcastle afloat. But he's gone to Nottingham Forest and he's doing really, really well. He's
more
of an old
school. Just tell us a little bit. Set it up. Like, what does he bring to that Nottingham Forest team?
Well, what he does is he occupies two centre-halves. There isn't a centre-half in the Premier League that is comfortable one-on-one with Chris Wood. There was one or two times last night when Morgan Gibbs-White played the ball into Chris Wood's feet, and you can see Kanate and Virgil van Dijk are 2 or 3 yards behind him, because they know if they go and get really tight, he'll just roll them. And he's so, so strong, so they drop off, which means he can go and get torn. And when he gets torn, he can give the ball to Alanga, he can give it to Hudson-Odoi. Gibbs-White will go and get in behind as well. So it's really good. And if you try and do a full court press against Nottingham Forest, think we'll go and get them all over the pitch, they just chip it into Chris Wood's chest and go from there. So it's
so simple, Keith, isn't it?
It really, look, on paper it's so, so simple, but again, teams think that Nottingham Forest will want to have some sort of the ball. They really don't. They're down in around 40% possession.
They're so hard to play against, though.
They are, because they do the exact opposite of what you want. Liverpool are a good pressing team. Okay, well, let's play over them for a while. And when the intensity comes out of the press, then maybe we'll try and play. It's brilliant from Nuno as well, a manager who was obviously didn't do too well at Spurs. So great to see him doing well. But if you listen to Nuno, he will tell you that Nottingham Forest aren't in a title race here.
Liverpool, we know, are in a title race. They'll probably be a bit disappointed with that result, even though it was, look, you can look at it both ways, I guess. But it was points dropped after all, and given the fact that they did create opportunities, but it doesn't seem like they're as solid at the back as they used to be, Keith.
No, it doesn't. And I think everybody was expecting, when Arne Slot came in, I was expecting there to be a little bit of a hangover and then to generally get better as the season went on. They started really, really well, and now I think everybody's anticipating a little bit of a drop off at some point with Liverpool. This seems to be it. It's not, you know, the end of the world by any means. They drew a couple of games. The first 45 minutes against Forest, they weren't very good at all. Couldn't create any clear-cut chances. But on a day where Gakpo wasn't really at the races, Mohamed Salah was quite quiet by his standards. Luis Diaz as well, fairly quiet. Diogo Jota comes off the bench and scores a header. Not the biggest man in stature, but a really good leap on him. So the bench is coming on and affecting games for Liverpool, even when on the odd occasion that the front three, front four for Liverpool are ineffective. They still come away from a really, really intimidating ground with a draw. So, look, I think this is Liverpool's dip, but it hasn't been as bad as what Liverpool, what other clubs needed to be to catch them up, in particular Manchester City.
Yeah, I thought that Chelsea might come out of their dip and beat Bournemouth, but they didn't. Cole Palmer and Reece James. It's actually good to see Reece James back, actually, and getting on the score sheet as well, because he's been out for so long.
Yeah, a player who's had, he's been dogged by injuries, hasn't he, the last couple of months. He's been a fantastic right back. I've listened to Enzo Maresca speaking about Reece James, and he's referenced the fact that he can play anywhere on the pitch, including left back as well. So he's covering a whole host of different positions with Reece James. A lovely free kick as well that he managed to score, and he just needs to build up his fitness. We all know as professionals, when you tend to get those hamstring problems, you know, you come in cold or you don't warm up properly, it's very, very easy to get little tears or little knock-on injury. So he just needs to look after his body that little bit better, Reece James, and come back and just stay injury free.
Yeah, easier said than done, though, isn't it? For Chelsea, are they going to be able to get back to winning ways?
I think they will get back to winning games. But look, again, I think this is pretty much what I said at the start of the season with Chelsea. They will win an awful lot of games, but they will lose games as well, because there's just that little bit of a flaky underbelly. I go back to the amount of contracts people have, but by and large, Enzo Maresca, for me, is doing an unbelievable job, because I didn't expect him to be here. I've used words like chaotic, unmanageable, too many internationals, too many egos, but it's been really, really dampened down. And the performances, by and large, have been really good. Just defensively, they've been a little bit all over the place at times, and some poorly timed tackles.
Yeah, two goals for Phil Foden for Manchester City against Brentford. I thought they were going to win that game, but no.
Yeah, well, look, Manchester City, they were huffing and puffing, and then when De Bruyne gives that lovely ball in behind the back four, that when I close my eyes and think of Kevin and De Bruyne, that's the pass I see him playing, that whipped ball in behind the back four. Foden opens out his left foot. It's a lovely little goal, and you're thinking City will kick on now and make this easy. But Brentford were the better team. Manchester City managed to go and make it 2-0, and you think, okay, that's it, game over. But Brentford fought their way back into it. Really good home form. I think on Brentford's home form, nobody should be surprised that Manchester City haven't been able to turn them over. But again, you just think that Manchester City game management, you're 2-0 up, 15-20 minutes to go, make it boring, kill the game. That possession game that they so often play when they get their noses in front, without Rodri, they just don't seem as comfortable on the ball as they usually do. But brilliant fight back from Brentford.
And Graham Potter has got his managerial career with West Ham off to a winning start, beating Fulham by 3-2, and they looked good.
They did look good. I look at West Ham, and under Lopetegui, you're looking at them thinking that high line doesn't suit them. They don't keep the ball well enough. He's asking questions of players that can't do the questions he's asking. But you look at Paqueta played as like a false nine, as a centre forward against Fulham last night. I don't think he's the answer. I know he got on the score sheet, but you know, we're hearing the likes of Evan Ferguson and Awoniyi at Nottingham Forest maybe coming into a West Ham on loan. The one thing I will say is when you look at Paqueta and when you look at Kudos, I know Jarrod Bowen has broke his foot and he's out for a little while. They have players that can hurt you. They're very, very good attacking players. It's just the likes of Kilman and Mavropanos. Two very good solid centre halves, but it's how you set them up. Like I say, under Lopetegui, on the halfway line, turning and running towards their own goal, that's not what them two big boys want to be doing. I know Kilman is probably not as big, he's a little bit more agile than Mavropanos, but it's a partnership. You can't ask one to do one and one to do the complete opposite. And yeah, I expect Graham Potter to get a tune out of this West Ham team, but very, very difficult to play your way into those type of things. And we know Graham Potter likes to play football.
David Moyes has his first game in charge as Everton manager. Well, not his first ever game, but in this spell he has anyway. They're playing Aston Villa tonight. What does this Everton side need to do besides the obvious, which is start scoring goals?
That is the main one for me. They really do lack goals. David Moyes coming back at Everton, it's a strange one. Everybody knows I'm a big Sean Dyche fan, and look, I think Everton are on track to stay in the league. I think if Sean Dyche had to stay at Everton, he would have kept them in the league, but apparently Everton fans feel like they want something more than that. But look, like I say, David Moyes is a safe pair of hands. I think there's three worse teams in the league than Everton. You know, I'm hearing in Everton fans, I'm reading chat as well of people speaking about Europe. I think that's way, way off the mark with this Everton team. When you look at the squad they have, I think from 15 to 20, that's in and around where they should be, and they're bang in that. So keep their head above water, get to the new stadium with the Premier League status still intact, and I think they'll be happy. But against Aston Villa, David Moyes' first game back in charge, it's a big, big ask.
I'll be keeping an eye on the lineups as well to see if Jacob Ryan gets in. It would be good for him if he could become a David Moyes style player, but not so sure yet. Keith, are Arsenal fans getting fed up with Mikel Arteta?
No. Well, I can only speak for myself, and personally I'm not. I still think we're a club that's going in the right direction, and you know, I think that's something that people take that for granted. Oh, we're a club going in the right direction. Look at where Spurs are, and I know it's Derby Day. I'm not trying to poke the beast here, but they're sitting in 13th position.
You're not trying to poke the beast here, sitting there in your Arsenal jersey.
But for Spurs to be in 13th, for Manchester United to be down the bottom half of the Premier League as well, it goes to show you the strength and depth that the Premier League has this season. And look, Arsenal played a big portion of the season without Odegaard, which is a big hurt, and then we got Saka injured as well. So look, injuries are coming to get us. I think that will ultimately be our undoing in the title race. Liverpool have picked it up and done really well. But in terms of this game, I can see us winning this game. I can see us losing this game. It's one of those derbies that, you know, form goes out the window. It doesn't really matter. But one thing I will say that will go into Arsenal's favour is Spurs had a really tough game on the weekend in the FA Cup against the mighty Tamworth. They had to go to extra time to beat them. And they do have a new goalkeeper in Kinski who... his first couple of games, he's looked really good. He looks capable, but those set pieces that Arsenal have will put him under a bit of pressure.
Who's it a bigger game for, Ange Postecoglou or Mikel Arteta?
Given the league position, you would have to say Ange. You would imagine he's under a little bit more pressure. I know Arsenal fans are probably thinking we should be up fighting with Liverpool. I'm not so sure. Again, I feel we're the club going in the right direction. We'll be there or thereabouts at the end. You know, Champions League football next season, I think, is, you know, I wouldn't say guaranteed, but we're right in the mixer to do that. And Tottenham, you know, a million miles off. Although it's great to watch, I'm really looking forward to watching both teams play tonight. Spurs will lose an awful lot of games because they don't do the basics well, Marie. If you're not willing to put your head in where it hurts, if you're not willing to defend set pieces, if you're not willing to enjoy defending, if you're just going to run out to the halfway line and stick your hand up and run back like it doesn't really matter, you are going to concede an awful lot of goals and lose an awful lot of games in the Premier League.
A couple of other games on tonight as well. Leicester City, Crystal Palace, Newcastle United and Wolves. So, look, another good night of action.
Yeah, great night. I'm really looking forward to the Newcastle and Wolves game. I think that'll be a really good game. The Geordies always get it bouncing up there. So Wolves, it's the old checkpoint, isn't it? Get to the first 20 minutes, try and keep it at nil off for as long as you can. But under the new manager, Wolves seem to have a little bit of ambition. They're starting to ease away from that the relegation zone. The one thing is Matheus Cunha, who's in such good form. He was injured for the last Premier League game. He's 10 Premier League goals already. He's on the bench for Wolves tonight. So he's one that, you know, could come off and make something happen if Wolves are still in the game. But you look at, I think it's a big game for Wolves tonight. You can look at where they are in the league in 17, but the next five Premier League games is Newcastle tonight, Chelsea, Arsenal, Aston Villa and Liverpool. That's a big run to try and get points off when you're at the wrong end of the table. So a bigger game for Wolves than maybe it looks on paper.
Before we finish up, just one on the League of Ireland. A bit of transfer news today that caught a lot of people's attention, and that is the move of young Michael Noonan, Ireland international, from St Pat's to Shamrock Rovers. He said in the statement that the lure of first team football was very appealing, and I can see why. But do you think it's the right move for him, and is it as easy as that, just stepping up to a first team or close enough to it?
No, it's never as easy as, you know, we'll move clubs and I'll play. It's never as black and white as that. One thing I will say is I was lucky enough, my short time in with Pat's under-17s, that Mick came into the team, and I got to get a taste of what he was all about. And one thing I will say is everybody within St Pat's thinks really, really highly of Michael Noonan, and everybody knows he's a fantastic footballer. I can't... I I can't speak from experience, but I haven't been in the St. Pat's building over the last 12 months, so I don't know for sure. But I would assume that Mick is one who pushed this through. You know, Conor Carty has come back to St. Pat's and he's probably just got shunted down the line a little bit, and he's looking, thinking, I don't see a pathway into the first team. And obviously with so many good strikers and Pat's being so prevalent up front, he's probably looking, thinking, I'm not sure I will get time. And maybe Rovers have made some promises, or maybe he sees a clearer pathway there. I'm not sure, with obviously Johnny Kenny going back to Celtic. But one thing I will say, he's a fantastic young boy. He's very, very eager to learn, and Mick has all the tools of the trade to go and be whatever he wants in this, take whatever he wants out of the game. He's a very, very talented boy.
It's quite heartening to see, though, that somebody like him has that ambition, that's for him right now what he wants. Same Mason Melia at St. Pat's, seeing Johnny Kenny coming back and starting to fly again, that it's now seen as a big opportunity to play first time team football here.
Yeah, I love it. As a coach, as a manager, if you were in St. Pat's, obviously you're banging your head off a wall thinking, I don't want Michael Noonan to leave this club. But you've got to love the ambition of the young man to be sitting there thinking, you know, he's in a decent position within Pat's. He's not very far away from breaking into that first team squad, maybe getting on the bench, maybe playing some cup games, but it's not enough for him. He wants more first team, and as he says in his statement, the lure of more first team football is what he wants, and I applaud him. You know, I know it's a million miles away, but you look at Cole Palmer with Manchester City to go to Chelsea and set the world on fire. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Mick will have something similar in his mind.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great? Keith Tracy, thank you so much. We're going to take a very quick break, but stay with us. We'll be hearing from Damien Lawler, who's going to set us up for a weekend of Gaelic Games Club Action. RTE 2FM. Now we're turning our attention to Gaelic Games. I'm delighted to say that Damien Lawler joins us on the line, as he does every Wednesday. But it's a particularly busy Wednesday, Damien, because we're a few days out from the AIB All-Ireland Club Finals. Let's get stuck into the hurling, and lots of excitement about this Nafina Sarsfields game.
Yeah, first time a Cork club and a Dublin club have met in an All-Ireland Final, Marie. Both teams have plenty in common. They have endured a lot of heartbreak on the field in recent years. And unfortunately, in Sarsfield's case too, Marie, they've endured heartbreak off the field with the flooding of their premises. And, you know, the recent passing of some beloved club members, none more so than the legendary Teddy McCarty. But look, their club actually got decimated and destroyed last year in Riverstown, down below in Carrigaline, and they actually opened the gates to prevent the locality from suffering, but the club really suffered in turn for that. And soon after that flood, they were back out in the community again helping the residents. So they've had unbelievable challenges off the field, and I suppose they lost the county final then against Imokili on the field, and they've had to bounce back from there. As regards Nafina, they've had ups and downs the last couple of years too. They've had heartbreaking county final losses on two occasions, but they've bounced back. They had a heartbreaking Leinster final loss to Loughlin Gaels last year, but they bounced back and they got over the line this time around. So two resilient teams, both sides well able to go to the wire and hold their own and come out on top, and something has to give on Sunday. It should be an intriguing game because Nafina are a measured ball-controlling team with lots of great forwards, and Sarsfields had a sensational result against Ballygunner in the Munster final because they took all the shackles off, went man for man, and they beat Ballygunner, who were many people's favourites for the All-Ireland. So I can't see anything, only a brilliant game at the weekend, Marie.
OK, well, you've been out talking to a few of the players from either camp ahead of this hurling game. Let's hear first from Nafina's Sean Murphy telling us about how his club got to where they had to.
It's been a great journey so far, and as you said there, like over years as well, not just this year, being able to kind of build on the resilience as a whole, really, as a team, learn how to lose, learn how to win, and learn how to plan for big days. So we're just trying to put our best foot forward on Sunday and represent the club well.
Sean, just a couple of years ago, maybe in the county final against Kilmacud, when you lose a game like that in heartbreaking fashion, it can go either two ways. You never bounce back from it, or you learn from it. What did you guys kind of pull together in the close season to come back again the next year?
Yeah, great question, because 2021 was a heartbreak of a year. It's kind of a testament, I guess, to the management team and to the players, more importantly. But we regrouped after that and just kind of, you know, we had the belief that we can get to a county final. So we just kind of set that again as our mission. And, you know, we worked at that week in, week out. We got back there again. As you know, then it didn't work out again that year, but same story. We kind of used that kind of to boost the morale amongst the group and, you know, really kind of drive ourselves on forward and thankfully, over the last couple of years, we've been able to enjoy the successes as well.
Sean, your manager, Neil, doesn't leave much to chance. He looks to me to be very structured, very organised. You guys know him from a long way out. What does he bring to your team day in, day out?
Yeah, he brings everything, really. You know, he's the top man there, and the hard work he's put in with Nafina over the years. And it's, you know, it's not just the last 3 or 4 years. He's been doing it for, you know, 12, 15 years. And then even before that as a player. But a testament to his hard work at Nafina now, he's obviously gotten the Dublin job, and I'm sure he'll have a great couple of years with them.
And finally, Sean, you know, All-Ireland final day, a march down the road, Moby Road. How important is it just for you guys to put all that to one side and just focus on another game? A game in Croke Park, a stadium that you're becoming used to too, in fairness.
Yeah, it's exactly it. So we're solely focused on producing a performance on Sunday. After the game on Sunday, we'll have time to reflect on what's been a great year and a great season, and we'll soak it in after that. But the main priority now is to focus on Sunday, put in a performance, and then hopefully get to the right side of the result.
Sean Murphy there of Nafina, speaking to yourself, Damien. It is huge for them, and when it's that first time as well, it just makes it so tricky and brings so much pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's kind of the note I finished off on, Marie. Like, we at the AIB press interviews earlier today, these guys are playing, say, the AIB All-Ireland Club Final on Sunday, and you can get totally carried away with the emotion of it, because 1,500 members from Nafina are going to march down the Joneses Road, I suppose, down Moby Road as well, to watch their team playing an All-Ireland Club Final. Now, you can get completely caught up in that occasion, but these guys just want to go and win now. They live and breathe the game of hurling. They formed their hurling culture in the Fianna over the last 15 to 20 years through men like Tom Ryan and Jimmy Gray, who set the tone, set the standards, brought in the game to the club, and now they're Dublin heavyweights, but, you know, they're Leinster heavyweights too, and they want to go on and win an All-Ireland title. And the way they play, the way they go through the channels, they go through the lines, they're crisscrossing, their movement, they'll be really well set. But they're up against a Sarsfields team that are well able to play too, Marie, that, you know, have got over the disappointment of being beaten by McKilly and have not looked back since, and they have learned from game to game that with an increased work ethic and with more direct attacking, well, they could be top of the tree as well.
Okay, well, let's hear from one of the Sarsfields players. You also caught up with Jack O'Connor at that AIB press conference a little bit earlier.
Look, obviously, I suppose when you're injured, it can get frustrating for anyone, you know, not being that you can't really perform at your best when you have, you know, these little niggles kind of holding you back and stuff. So, look, they've all cleared up now in a way. And like you said there, yeah, look, it's great to be able to go out in the field and just kind of be your best and do what you can, I suppose.
It's the first time a Cork team is playing a Dublin team in an All-Ireland final. And I suppose most importantly then, what's your mentality going to be? Because if you look at all the games Nafina have played, they are fit, they have lots of composure, they've hung on in tight games as well as yourselves. What will be the Sars approach? Is it, you know, just to weigh up, see where the various matchups are and get your own approach right?
Yeah, I suppose obviously, look, just looking at them briefly, they've got some very dangerous forwards up top. You know, they will need a bit of minding. But I suppose really we won't be changing too much from what we've been going with for the last three games, the last three Munster Championship games and all that. So semi-final, I don't think there'll be much changes. We'll kind of still go with the same kind of game plan and the same kind of attitude of going out there and work as hard as you can. But look, obviously, we know the threat they have inside. They've got some serious forwards and they'll need minding as well. And they've obviously got some excellent backs as well.
I was going to say, enjoy it, Jack, but that's easy for me to say.
Yeah, thanks, Damon. I might be a bit nervous now building up to it, but look, we'll enjoy it.
Oh, I'd say they'll all be nervous. It's such a big one, but it's
well, Marie, I'll be honest, Marie, if I Jack O'Connor running at me on All-Ireland Final Day, I'd be nervous too. But look, I think as you say, it's a big, big occasion, and it's who settles down quickly, puts a marker down. But the gas thing is, neither of these teams will die away, Marie. So like, it's going to go right to the wire, I think.
It really will. January's a funny time of year, isn't it? Because everyone is so busy trying to get themselves set up for the season to come. But there's lots going on just in terms of lads playing club and colleges and county and trying to keep everything going. And then you've got to try and adapt to the new rules as well. Tony O'Regan has written a new book, MVP, Raise Your Game, all about trying to unlock your potential. And it's probably something that's much needed in Gaelic games at the moment, Damien.
Yeah, Marie, never more so than right now. And we'll hear from Tony in a second. But just to give some context, at the minute, you have you have the likes of the club players and Sigerson and Trench Cup players, first year fresh herb teams playing the old rules, last year's Gaelic football rules. And then, you know, you have inter-county teams, they're all part of inter-county setups mostly. They're playing their challenge matches and doing their football training for the Allianz League with the new rules. So that's one little load to worry about. Then secondly, if most inter-county players are a certain age these days, and it's not an old age, a lot of them are in college, or a lot of them are maybe students or student teachers or just out of the college system. So they're still eligible for quite a few teams. So you've got some people playing Fitzgibbon, Sigerson, you're playing for potentially a club if your club has reached the All-Ireland final stages, and that might only apply to two clubs per code, but like you've got intermediate and junior and senior now in both codes, and you know a lot of them would have gone through to semi-finals and provincial finals, so a lot of players are going through with that. And then on top of all this, you have a heavy pre-season campaign and a heavy pre-season schedule. All the McKenna Cups and the O'Byrne Cups and the Munster Leagues, they've been done away with for this year, but that doesn't mean that counties are sitting back slacking off. In fact, it's far from it. They're probably averaging two challenge matches a week, and this is probably coming on top of maybe 7 weeks of intense workload and conditioning, the way it's the S&C. So it is very, very difficult to maintain everything. Just to recap on all that, different rules, different teams, but you could be out 4 or 5 nights a week and you could be playing a game at the weekend, and it's still only mid-January, Marie. So I went up to the launch of Tony Oakes' book, MVP, and I spoke to him about, you know, is this nearly the most difficult time of the year for players and concerned?
I think with the inter-county season now and the colleges both kicking off in January, obviously, I'd say management teams are now trying to manage the load between the colleges players and prepared them properly for the start of the National Hurling League and making sure that the experienced players in the panel are getting adequate game time to be sharp for the start of the National League, but also hopefully exposing younger players to, you know, debuts and minutes to get them up to speed and get them up to tempo and physicality and the pace of inter-county hurling for the National Hurling League. So I think that's really, really important, I think, for players and management. It's about setting out, you know, the expectation for the year. What's our vision of success? As I spoke a lot around in terms of chapter one of my book around clarity versus confusion. What's the values I want to show as a team and as a teammate? What are some of the process performance goals I want to set around my preparation or around my performance on the field or around my training? And just generally, what my book will really help is getting players and management and coaches having a mental performance plan in place for the season ahead.
That's a lot that needs to be done for players, and Tony outlines it fairly well there, and I'm sure many of them will be buying into that now at the start of the season. And look, one player that's been carrying quite a significant load for quite a long time is Conor Callaghan, and he's going to contest the All-Ireland football final for Coola against Errigal Kieran. But look, he's already one of the greats, but this would take him to a whole other level, wouldn't it, Damien, if they were to win?
Yeah, Marie, as you say, he's already in the record books anyway, but he will join a very elite club if Coola can win the IB All-Ireland Club football final on Sunday. He'll join the likes of Jimmy Barry and a select group of St. Finbar's men who've, you know, won All-Ireland Club titles in both codes. And Alan Kearns, of course, did it with Salt Hill Knock Nakara, and did it with Claren Bridge and their hurling as well. And I think in Jimmy Barry Murphy's career, he played 16 All-Ireland finals in both codes and won 13. This will be Conn's 10th at the weekend, and he hasn't lost very many either, Marie, to be honest with you. So he is on the verge of history, and I suppose the comparisons with JBM and the like will be made. But I think maybe it'll be something for Conn not to focus on, certainly in the build of this game, but going forward, and when he reflects back on his career, which is obviously is a long way to run yet, he will see himself right up there with the greatest of all time, particularly if he can make a record like this, you know. And if Coola do win, they'll join a select bunch too by winning All-Irelands in both codes. Because, you know, the Bars have done it. I suppose people might have expected, you know, couldn't Athena do it? You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the weekend, because there is a lot up for stake. And I have to say, the club competition, you know, it's really, really grown. And one of the best things Sean Kelly did as president was bringing in the intermediate and junior into the ranks as well, because I think we're getting to see it in all its glory now, Marie. There are no pre-season competitions, and people can actually sit back and look and focus on the club competitions. I brought my kids down to St. Conan's Park last Sunday just to watch the two Canavans, really, if I'm being honest about it. And they pitched up at one end to watch Dara and Rory, and at halftime the kids changed with them and went up to the other end of the field to watch them, just to watch their movement, just to watch their skills, you know, strong hand pass, weak hand pass, left foot, right foot, their pace. And obviously there's a lot of other players on the field as well, but I think you get a first row seat into watching players like that. They're not automatically surrounded by blanket defences like they are at county level. And I think the club competition is absolutely thriving. And, you know, it's just about got its room in the calendar. It's a tight calendar, to Marie. There's no point in saying otherwise.
Yeah, well, look, hopefully we might get as good a game as the Eric Kira and Dr. Croaks won last weekend. Yeah. Damien Lawler, as always, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Marie.
So that is it from us this evening. Just to wrap up the day's news, and there has been plenty of it. Carla Ward has been appointed the Republic of Ireland women's head coach. The FAI confirmed the news today with this statement. And for those of you that don't know who Carla Ward is, she is a former Sheffield United, Birmingham City and Aston Villa manager. She succeeds Eileen Gleeson and is going to take on the role with immediate effect on a deal that will run right through the campaign for the 2027 FIFA Women's World Cup. We heard from her a little bit earlier, and she's determined to get the Ireland women's team to the World Cup. She will be joined by Alan Mahan, former footballer and former Man City women's coach, and also Emma Byrne will reprise her role as the goalkeeping coach. Unfortunately, Jacob Ryan does not start for Everton tonight, but who knows what will happen during David Moyes' tenure. That is it from us for this evening. Beto De Silva's up next.